But how am I to know whether these things fell from the sky in Sweden, or were imagined in Sweden? I shall be scientific about it? Said Sir Isaac Newton, or virtually said he, if there is no change in the direction of a moving body, the direction of a moving body is not changed. But, continued he, if something be changed, it is changed as much as it is changed. So red worms fell from the sky, in Sweden, because from the sky, in Sweden, red worms fell. How do geologists determine the age of rocks? By the fossils in them. And how do they determine the age of the fossils? By the rocks therein. Having started with the logic of Euclid, I go on with the wisdom of a Newton. New Orleans Daily Picayune, February 4, 1892. Enormous numbers of unknown brown worms that had fallen from the sky, near Clifton, Indiana. San Francisco Chronicle, February 14, 1892. Myriads of unknown scarlet worms somewhere in Massachusetts, not seen to fall from the sky, but found, covering several acres, after a snowstorm. It is as if with intelligence, or with the equivalence of intelligence, something has specialized upon transporting, or distributing, immature and larval forms of life. If the gods send worms, that would be kind if we were robins. In Insect Life, 1892, p. 335, the editor, Professor C. V. Riley, tells of four other mysterious appearances of worms, early in the year 1892. Some of the specimens he could not definitely identify. It is said that at Lancaster, PA, people in a snowstorm caught falling worms on their umbrellas. The wise men of our tribes have tried to find God in a poem, or in whatever they think they mean by a moral sense in people, or in inscriptions in a book of stone, which by one of the strangest freaks of omission is not now upon exhibition in from 15 to 20 synagogues in Asia Minor, and all up and down Italy. Crabs and periwinkles. Ordinary theologians have overlooked crabs and periwinkles. Or mystery versus the fishmonger. Upon May 28, 1881, near the city of Worcester, England, a fishmonger, with a procession of carts, loaded with several kinds of crabs and periwinkles, and with a dozen energetic assistants, appeared at a time when nobody on a busy road was looking. The fishmonger and his assistants grabbed sacks of periwinkles, and ran in a frenzy, slinging the things into fields on both sides of the road. They raced to gardens, and some assistants, standing on the shoulders of other assistants, had sacks lifted to them, and dumped sacks over the high walls. Meanwhile, other assistants, in a dozen carts, were furiously shoveling out periwinkles, about a mile along the road. Also, meanwhile, several boys were busily mixing in crabs. They were not advertising anything. Above all, there was secrecy. The cost must have been hundreds of dollars. They appeared without having been seen on the way, and they melted away equally mysteriously. There were houses all around, but nobody saw them. Would I be so kind as to tell what, in the name of some slight approximation to sanity, I mean by telling such a story? But it is not my story. The details are mine, but I have put them in, strictly in accordance with the circumstances. There was, upon May 28, 1881, an occurrence near Worcester, and the conventional explanation was that a fishmonger did it. Inasmuch as he did it unobserved, if he did it, and inasmuch as he did it with tons upon acres, if he did it, he did it as I have described, if he did it. In Land and Water, June 4, 1881, a correspondent writes that, in a violent thunderstorm, near Worcester, tons of periwinkles had come down from the sky, covering fields and a road, for about a mile. In the issue of June 11, the editor of Land and Water writes that specimens had been sent to him. He notes the mysterious circumstance, or the indication of a selection of living things, that appears in virtually all the accounts. He comments upon an enormous fall of sea creatures, unaccompanied by sand, pebbles, other shells, and seaweed. In the Worcester Daily Times, May 30, it is said that, upon the 28th, news had reached Worcester of a wonderful fall from the sky of periwinkles on Cromer Gardens Road, and spread far around in fields and gardens. Mostly, people of Worcester were incredulous, but some had gone to the place. Those who had faith returned with periwinkles. Two correspondents then wrote that they had seen the periwinkles upon the road before the storm, where probably a fishmonger had got rid of them. So the occurrence conventionalized, and out of these surmises arose the story of the fishmonger, though it has never been told before, as I have told it. Mr. J. Lloyd Bosward, a writer whose notes on meteorological subjects are familiar to readers of scientific periodicals of this time, was investigating, and his findings were published in the Worcester Evening Post, June 9. As to the story of the fishmonger, note his statement that the value of periwinkles was 16 shillings a bushel. He says that a wide area on both sides of the road was strewn with periwinkles, hermit crabs, and small crabs of a certain species. Worcester is about 30 miles from the mouth of the River Severn, or, say, about 50 miles from the sea. Probably no fishmonger in the world ever had, at one time, so many periwinkles, but as to anybody having got rid of a stock, because of a glutted market, for instance, Mr. Bosward says, neither upon Saturday, the 28th, nor Friday, the 27th, was there such a thing procurable in Worcester as a live periwinkle. Gardens as well as fields were strewn. There were high walls around these gardens. Mr. Bosward tells of about 10 sacks of periwinkles, of a value of about £20, in the markets of Worcester, that, to his knowledge, had been picked up. Crowds had filled pots and pans and bags and trunks before he got to the place. In Mr. Mond's garden, two sacks were filled with them. It is his conclusion that the things fell from the sky during the thunderstorm. So his is the whirlwind explanation. There are extraordinary occurrences, and conventionalization cloaks them, and the more commonplace the cloakery, the more satisfactory. Periwinkles appear upon a tract of land, through which there is a road. A fishmonger did it. But the crabs and the fishmonger, and if the fishmonger did the periwinkles, did he do the crabs, if he did it? Or the crabs and the whirlwind, and, if the periwinkles were segregated from pebbles and seaweed, why not from the crabs, if segregation did it? The strongest point for the segregationists is in their own mental processes, which illustrate that segregations, whether by wind action, or not, do occur. If they have periwinkles and crabs to explain, and, say, that with a story of a fishmonger, or of a whirlwind, they can explain the periwinkles, though so they cannot explain the crabs, a separation of data occurs in their mentalities. They forget the crabs and tell of the periwinkles. 2. Frogs and fishes and worms, and these are the materials of our expression upon all things, hops and flops and squirms, and these are the motions. But we have been considering more than matter and motion, to start with, we have been considering attempts by scientists to explain them. By explanation, I mean organization. There is more than matter and motion in our existence, there is organization of matter and motion. Nobody takes a little clot that is central in a disease germ, as absolute truth, and the latest scientific discovery is only something for ideas to systematize around. But there is this systematization, or organization, and we shall have to consider it. There is no more meaning, though that may be utmost meaning, to arrangements of observations, than there is to arrangements of protoplasm in a microbe, but it must be noted that scientific explanations do often work out rather well. But say in medical treatments, if ailments are mostly fancied, or in stock market transactions, except in a crisis, or in expert testimony in the courts, except when set aside by other expert testimony. But they are based upon definitions. And in phenomenal existence there is nothing that is independent of everything else. Given that there is continuity, everything is a degree or aspect of whatever everything else is. Consequently there is no way of defining anything, except in terms of itself. Try any alleged definition. What is an island? An island is a body of land completely surrounded by water. And what is a body of land that is completely surrounded by water? Among savage tribesmen, there is a special care for, or even respectfulness for, the mentally afflicted. they are regarded as in some obscure way representing God's chosen. We recognize the defining of a thing in terms of itself, as a sign of feeble-mindedness. All scientists begin their works with just such definitions, implied, if not stated. And among our tribes there is a special care for, or even respectfulness for, scientists. It will be an expression of mind that there is a godness in this idiocy. But, no matter what sometimes my opinion may be, I am not now writing that God is an idiot. Maybe he, or it, drools comets and gives us earthquakes, but the scale would have to be considered at least superidiocy. I conceive, or tell myself that I conceive, that if we could have a concept of our existence as a whole, we could have a kind of understanding of it, rather akin to what, say, cells in an animal organism could have of what is a whole to them, if they should not be mere scientists, trying to find out what a bone is, or the flow of blood in a vein is, in itself, but if they could comprehend what the structures and functions of the organism are, in terms of itself. The attempted idea of existence as organism is one of the oldest of the pseudo-thoughts of philosophy. But the idea in this book is not metaphysical. Metaphysical speculations are attempts to think unthinkably, and it is quite hard enough to think thinkably. There can be nothing but bafflement for anybody who tries to think of existence as organism. Our attempt will be to think of an existence as an organism. Having a childish liking for a little rhetoric, now and then, I shall call it God.